This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The idea of the first 100 days of an American presidency as a benchmark was inadvertently born on July 24, 1933, during President Franklin Roosevelt's third fireside chat. In the first paragraph, FDR explained why, in the week since the adjournment of Congress, he hadn't addressed the nation, saying he wanted the, quote, opportunity of a little quiet thought to examine and assimilate in a mental picture the crowding events of the 100 days which had been devoted to the starting of the wheels of the New Deal. That's all it was, a casual mention of the passage of time. But since then, the first 100 days of a presidency are considered the most powerful, and the occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue is measured by what he has accomplished in that time. Though President Trump has called this a ridiculous standard, he made mention of it himself on the campaign trail on many occasions.
Just think about what we can accomplish in the first 100 days. We're going to have the biggest tax cut since Ronald Reagan, even bigger. Just think about what we can accomplish in the first 100 days.
Just think about what we can accomplish in the first 100 days.
Just think about
what we can accomplish
in the first 100 days of our presidency.
Then candidate Trump also published a contract with the American voter, calling it his 100-day action plan to make America great again. It included 18 items to be accomplished between January 20th and April 29th, and among those items was the restoration of honesty and accountability. But a lot of what he promised has yet to be accomplished, and when he was asked recently to account for that, here's what he said.
No particular rush, but we'll see what happens. But healthcare is coming along well. Government is coming along really well. A lot of good things are happening. Thank you, folks.
You think you're going to get a healthcare vote next week?
100 days?
No. Doesn't matter if it's next week. Next week doesn't matter.
But Press Secretary Sean Spicer had a list of accomplishments at the ready.
So far, we've passed 24 laws. We've signed 24 executive orders. We've achieved the first Supreme Court confirmation in 100 days since 1881. We've instituted tough immigration policies that have driven illegal border crossings to a 17-year low. We've removed more job-killing regulation through legislation than any president in U.S. history.
Saturday will mark President Trump's 100th day in office. So in advance of that, we've assembled a group of political scientists to reflect on what has been accomplished, what is left to be done, a checklist of promises made versus promises kept, and the likelihood of the remaining promises being fulfilled. We're joined by Dr. Susan Roberts, professor of political science at Davidson College. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
She returns to our Spirit Square studio with Dr. Scott Huffman, a professor of political science at Winthrop University in Rock Hill and the director of the Winthrop Poll. Good to see you again.
Good to see you.
And joining us by phone is Dr. Chris Cooper, head of the Department of Political Science and Public Affairs at Western Carolina University. Thanks for being here.
Great to be here.
So, FDR made this slight mention of the first 100 days of his presidency in a fireside chat in which he outlined the purposes of the National Recovery Administration, which was set up to help lift the nation out of the Great Depression. Why did those first 100 days in office then become a benchmark against which presidents are measured, Dr. Roberts?
Well, I think it was a time of crisis. There were many things that the president needed to do. And I think people want to look at the presidency and say, how do we judge this person against the second 100 days or the third? And I think the promises are made. We have much more in terms of campaigning versus governing. And Trump said that he didn't know where that 100 days artificial deadline came from for him. Well, he said it himself. This morning, it was incredible. Of course, we're thinking about classes here with college professors. The headline was in the New York Times, Trump rejects the 100-day mark, but wants an A. That's like somebody saying, I reject the exam, but I want an A. Incredulous. And I think we've looked at a lot of the presidents and said 100 days, I would think not just looking at accomplishment, but also leadership. And I think there's a big gulf. Trump may fail both.
He also made mention of the fact that he didn't know where that contract with the American voter came from, but his signature is on it. So obviously he looked at it long enough to sign it. If FDR set the standard in terms of the first 100 days and it became a benchmark, Is that an actual fair benchmark for other presidents? Because as Susan Roberts pointed out a second ago, it was an emergency time in America. It was the Great Depression. Things were really, really bad, and he and Congress worked very hard to do a lot of things very quickly when he came into office. I understand, I could be wrong about this, that it was not unusual back then, in those first 100 days of the FDR administration, for ideas to leave the White House in the morning and be returned in the afternoon as legislation ready to be signed.
Well, to back up, the first 100 days benchmark is a bit arbitrary. I mean, we just ended up picking that because it was something that FDR himself mentioned, and journalists and people are always looking, so well, how do we compare one president to the next? And, oh, well, their early days in office, how early? First month, first 2 months, and then we ended up with this 100-day stretch. So we've done that. It is arbitrary, but it is actually a way to compare one president to the next under different circumstances, because some come in when the Congress is the same party, some come in divided government, some come in with Congress the opposite party. But the big difference for FDR was, you know, as you pointed out, there was this sense of emergency, this idea that the country was in the depth of a depression never before experienced. There was willingness among most in Congress, and at least the dominant party in Congress, to get this legislation through. It is also the beginning of our understanding of the difference between conservatives and liberals today. I mean, FDR and the Democrats in Congress described the government expansion, and you mentioned the National Industrial Recovery Act, National Recovery Act. And, you know, this expansion of government, FDR and his supporters described as liberal, and the Republicans said, well, if that government expansion is liberal, we must be conservative. And that's not how those terms were used before. But I think it was the exigency of the time that led to that, the speediness of that. But other presidents have had signature legislation be able to get through. I mean, Jimmy Carter is not, you know, hailed as one of the more effective presidents, but he got 22 pieces of legislation through, many of which he pushed. And the number that Trump has signed, are none of them have been his signature legislation. All of them were in the planning stages anyway.
And not all presidents have embraced this idea of the first 100 days. Dr. Cooper, I know John Kennedy, and I believe it was in his inaugural address, laid out all these plans that he wanted to accomplish over the course of his presidency, and he said not all of this will be accomplished in the first 100 days or the first 1,000 days or perhaps even in the first term. I believe that he went that far as to say that. So he was kind of backing away, distancing himself from that back in 1960.
Yeah, he was. I think he was, and he was trying to. I think that did not hold over time, right? I think, as the other two panelists pointed out, presidents and journalists alike have sort of held on to this 100-day standard for, you know, at least the last couple of decades. You asked a minute ago, is this a fair standard? On the one hand, I would say no. I don't want government to be fast necessarily. I want government to be fair. I want government to be responsive when it needs to be. At the same time, as you pointed out, Trump himself came out and put this 100-day standard out. Clinton put this 100-day standard out. Carter put this 100-day standard out. Reagan put this 100-day standard out. So I think presidents have put it out there. Journalists have glommed onto it. It's become this sort of common heuristic to understand American politics. And so, no, I don't think it's necessarily fair. But, you know, presidents are kind of getting what they asked for.
So let me put this out to all three of you. All these presidents, not all of them, but the ones that Dr. Cooper just mentioned, embrace the idea of the 100 days, the first 100 days. How many of these presidents, since FDR, get a passing grade on the first one? Or how would you rank them in terms of how they did?
Well, there's a difference in getting a passing grade and doing well enough to keep your scholarship. So that's how it, and the answer for the most part is, you know, that most of them squeaked by. There's really very few A's. And the reason is something that Dr. Cooper was alluding to. Government's not designed to work quickly. The FDR example is the exception, not the rule. Our founders deliberately designed a system so that there would be multiple hurdles. In fact, this is something that the Trump administration seem to not grasp in this idea of, oh, a businessman can come in and get things done. Government doesn't operate like a business. And in fact, it should not operate like a business, because they have, you know, the government
and
exists
for the
people.
And yet he just compared Social Security and one other agency as individual companies within the government.
Right.
They're
and
bigger than
sure. You have things that actually are sort of like companies within the government. The post office, they're, you know, government corporations, Amtrak. There are things that are treated that way. Right. However, the fact that they're, you know, struggling to grasp that they must fight with the legislature, even has to fight with his own bureaucracy and the courts, is something alien. And he came in with a lot of, you know, vim and vigor. He signed a lot of executive orders, and many of them, you know, mostly ineffective, some of them much, much more substantial than others. But he has not been able to get a signature piece of legislation through. And in fact, back to Chris's point, you know, our system wasn't designed for a new president to be able to steamroll in and get a ton of substantive things accomplished. Our system was designed, especially the Senate, for deliberation.
Susan Roberts.
Well, I think when we look at it as well, I mean, we've gotten into the promises the president made. And he also said, I'm going to win. I'm going to win so much, you're going to say, please quit winning.
Stop winning.
I think we look at numbers, and actually Trump passed at least one fewer executive order in the first 12 days than Barack Obama. I think if you look at also the numbers game that we're in, polling is much more important. It was really, it wasn't something that was omnipresent with FDR. It's just gotten more and more pronounced. And Trump made some very simplistic promises. There were three words like repeal and replace, build the wall, things such as drain the swamp, lock her up. And you make simplistic promises like that.
And none of those have happened.
None of those have happened. And in fact, he has equivocated so much about who will pay for the wall. If you look at tweets from the middle of April until just a week ago or even just days ago, it's now we need Mexico will pay at some time in some way so we can build early. He also just said, I mean, quite frankly, I didn't realize how complicated health care was.
Yeah.
And I think he had no idea about, as Scott has said and Chris, that this is a process. And it's not just, it's like he came in like Ross Perot. Let's just fire them all. Let's get out there and fire them all.
So, Dr. Cooper, in how many cases have the first 100 days laid the groundwork for the success or the failure of a presidency? How important is this in the scheme of things? It's 100 days out of 4 years at least.
Right. Yeah, I think it's so hard. We're trying to keep score by, you know, counting pieces of legislation, counting executive orders, but it's hard to look and really understand what the substance of things are. And I think Scott pointed out really well that each one of these presidents faced different context, right? And that really matters. It matters if you have both, both houses of Congress on your side. It matters if you are facing a divided Congress. So I think we're trying to divine a lot out of radically different circumstances. So sometimes, yes, it has told us that it's going to be a successful presidency. Sometimes it's given us a clue that it may not. But I don't think it is, an absolute predictor at all.
No, but it does define the honeymoon period, too. It's not a predictor of the eventual success, but it does point out one way in which, okay, what is the relationship of the president going to be like with the rest of government?
We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about that, and we'll talk about perhaps some of the things that have led to his inability to accomplish many of the things that he's wanted to accomplish up to this point when we come back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Charlotte Mecklenburg Libraries. Get ready with words, assisted by Discovery Place, encouraging success in young children through vocabulary building. Parents and caregivers can teach a child words of the week at getreadywithwords.org. And the Charlotte Jazz Arts Initiative, presenting the 2017 Lush Life Spring Gala, Saturday, May 20th at the Ritz-Carlton, featuring music from the Piedmont Triad Jazz Orchestra. The event supports the Jazz Academy. Tickets at thejazzarts.org. Well, tonight, CMS Superintendent Ann Clark will release her student assignment plan. We'll give you a quick review of that plan first thing tomorrow morning, and then a closer look at a fight that's been brewing for years. It's over craft beer and craft beer brewers and their desire to control their own distribution as they grow. A House bill would have fixed all of this, but then it went nowhere. We'll talk about that tomorrow.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, after a bloody Taliban attack on a military base, Defense Secretary Mattis is in Afghanistan. How long and how deeply should the U.S. stay involved? That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
Stay tuned for On Point following Charlotte Talks from 10 to noon on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Saturday marks the 100th day in office of President Donald J. Trump, and we're taking a look at promises made versus promises kept with Dr. Susan Roberts, professor of political science at Davidson College, Dr. Scott Huffman, same at Winthrop University, and Dr. Chris Cooper, heading up the department there at Western Carolina University. Recently on NPR, Barbara Perry, who is director of presidential studies at the Miller Center at the University of Virginia, used a comparison to Mount Everest to describe President Trump's first 100 days. She said, and I quote, "It's as steep as they come and ice covered, and he didn't bring very many knowledgeable Sherpas with him. Is this an entry-level president? I think that's too generous. Unless he would be an intern, he would not have a position in the White House. With no educational experience, no military experience, no government, no political experience. Is that part of the problem here?"
Well, I think people have said, you know, there is a steep learning curve. But people have also said that's thinking that he wants to learn. And I'm not sure that's the case. He comes in, we always thought other political scientists, they would surround themselves with people that would, you know, give him and a culture and understanding of the White House. And that's just not what has happened. If you look back even before what he's doing in office, his transition was not a success. And I know numbers don't do well on the radio, but 85% of his sub-cabinet appointments have not been filled, and many of them not even nominated. You know, it's as if you have a skeleton government. Clinton had a lot of spaghetti string organization the first several months. But if you look at the crisis within the White House, who has the presidency or who doesn't? Where is Bannon? Where is Kushner? I think that's also something to think about. Is he willing to learn, and who is he listening to? And people have said it's who has his ear at the last moment.
Part of the challenge with Donald Trump, Dr. Cooper, is the fact that he, in the tradition of Republican Newt Gingrich, who came up with a contract with America when he was in Congress, Trump published his contract with the American voter, which he subtitled "A 100-Day Action Plan to Make America Great Again," in which he made a lot of promises, and he did it inside and outside of this contract. Some of the other promises aren't even in the contract. But many of his followers have since said, well, we never took what he said literally. Those of you who are taking him literally are making a mistake here. So is that going to be his cushion? Are his followers, or the people who really not only voted for him but continue to support him, they don't care that these promises are not going to be literally fulfilled?
Right. I mean, I think his true cushion is partisanship, right? Is, you know, I think somebody said partisanship is a dangerous drug, and I think that's what we're seeing now. I think it's 96% of folks who supported Trump in a recent poll said that they still support him. I mean, I think partisanship at this point is coloring American public opinion so much that some of these actions don't seem to matter in the way they used to, right? So we've always assumed that voters are sort of retrospective, right? They kind of look back and they say, hey, this person did fill these promises, or they didn't, or government worked better, or government looked worse. That doesn't seem to be happening today.
He essentially ran against Washington. He said, I'm an outsider. I will come in. I will fix this mess. It's broken beyond repair, but I can do it. I'm the only guy who can do this.
That's right.
And people voted for him because they were sick and tired of Washington not getting anything done. If he can't get the things he said he would do done, isn't he one of them?
No, he's the champion. As Chris pointed out, his supporters still adore him. Look, if you look at his approval ratings, he's got the worst approval ratings of any president in the first 100 days.
He's got great
ever.
Disapproval ratings.
Right, but he also still has the base. The base is still supporting him to the tune of almost 80% in most places. So, and a lot of folks, when they are asked, and these are Republicans, are asked, in a disagreement between the Republican Congress and Donald Trump, who do you support? And it's Donald Trump. Donald Trump is seen as the conservative champion, even when his policies are not traditionally conservative at all. So is he going to be blamed for these things? Not by his supporters. You just pointed out he's claimed to be the guy who's going to ride in and fight Washington culture. And to them, it just looks like he's in the midst of a heroic battle against them. So, you know, they're fighting against him in the minds of his supporters, and his supporters, as Chris pointed out, are still almost fully behind
him.
And
in truth, if he accomplishes some of these things, maybe all of these things, over the course of 4 years or even 8 years if he's reelected, it won't matter about the first 100 days, correct?
That's correct. But I think also we have not had a president, I think, that came in with the bookies in Los Angeles saying, okay, I think he'll be impeached in the first 6 months. We haven't had a president that really had no concept that his party, and there could have been a contested convention, he really didn't understand that. I think, you know, have we had a president that faced, you know, we're talking about 100 days. What about day 99 when there could be a government shutdown? This is very unique.
No, he's also not a politician, and I don't think that's an insult. It would certainly not be
sure.
an insult to him. But Dennis emails Dr. Cooper, did Trump misjudge the unity of the Republican Party? An example, the Freedom Caucus derailing the health care bill. Did he really think that as the nominee and the winner of the election, that suddenly he would be able to run roughshod over Republicans?
Yes.
I think he absolutely did, right? And so, you know, I'm talking to you from the North Carolina's 11th Congressional District, and we're represented here by Mark Meadows, the head of the Freedom Caucus.
Yes, I know.
You know, so I think that's absolutely right. I think Trump did think that he would become the de facto party leader when he became president. And for the American people, he kind of has, right? And so somebody, I think, said that we're in a time where parties are weak, but partisanship is strong. In other words, parties aren't able to make things happen in the way they used to, but for the average voter, that is still the dangerous drug that basically determines who they vote for.
Given the fact that he beat the presumptive winner, Hillary Clinton, and I think everybody thought Hillary Clinton
sure.
would beat him, and he won. Why haven't Republicans marched in lockstep with him? Why not?
Well, Chris just pointed out that the people who say I'm a Republican are in lockstep with him. They are saying I support him, but
why isn't the party supporting him, given that the people who vote Republican are supporting him?
Well, I think, too, I mean, he threatened the Freedom Caucus because they didn't go along with him. He said, we've learned a lot about loyalty. He was blaming Paul Ryan. He was upset that the votes weren't there. He's blaming the Democrats. At the same time, he says, we need bipartisanship. He is very good at throwing stones at other Republicans. And I think he also realizes that he got the votes, but these were people perhaps, and I'm not saying this myself, but people that didn't support Donald Trump but did not like Hillary Clinton. There are a number of people that weren't in the 11th district and were in places that you didn't have a strong Freedom Caucus that just didn't like Hillary Clinton. And that's not he has to realize that a lot of the Republicans were not comfortable. They wanted someone that was more partisan, was more Republican. Is he a true Republican? That rhetoric has not plagued a lot of presidents.
So we have these I think there are three artificial time periods. The first 100 days, the so-called honeymoon period, which seems to be nebulous in terms of how long that lasts. And then one political expert said that the average president has about 9 months to accomplish anything significant. Because after that, everybody's attention turns to the midterm elections. And after that, the presidential campaign begins anew. Is that true?
Well, he's already filed again, I think, to run for president.
Yes. But health care, the Affordable Care Act took 18 months. But within that first 9 months, I think the groundwork was laid, absolutely. However, that 18-month period where it finally got accomplished is also partially to blame for Barack Obama losing Congress as well. And, you know, when we look at this artificial thing of first 100 days, it's difficult to look at any successes he's had because of his own bombast. You know, the I can do this, I can do this, and then not being able to do it and then claiming that doesn't matter. But, you know, we can look at some things that people have been saying for a while. A lot of folks, including probably Hillary Clinton, believed we should have sent missiles into Syria before. And, you can counter-argue, well, Assad probably wouldn't have used chemical weapons if Trump hadn't shown such friendliness to Russia and not removing them. That doesn't matter. We probably should have done this before. Trump has taken a new tack with China. Has he backtracked on what he said during the campaign? With 100% accuracy, he has backtracked. But engaging China to go after North Korea shows that he may be getting his feet under him. He's just going to have to deal with his own rhetoric. And that way, he's his own worst enemy, but his supporters don't care.
So let's talk about some of the things that he said on the campaign trail that he promised. Dr. Cooper, Mr. Trump promised that on day one, he would redirect immigration enforcement, alter trade relations with China and other nations, relax restrictions on energy production, impose new rules on lobbyists, halt efforts to combat global warming, lift curbs on guns, I didn't know there were any, push congressional term limits, and demand new strategy for defeating ISIS, all on day one. Did Dr. Cooper, he do any of that?
Well, if you're going to hold him to his actual promises, then no. I mean, I think I don't think he did. But the question is, does it matter? I mean, there's this sort of joke of, do we take him seriously or do we take him literally? Right? I had to look up those words to realize they did, in fact, mean different things. And I think we can't
give us the definition. Hold on, stop right there. Give us the definition.
Yeah,
give us what's the difference between seriously and literally?
I mean, I think what folks are saying is we believe his bombast. You know, to quote Scott from before, we believe the sense of who Donald Trump is. We're not so concerned with the specifics of his policy. And because I think, as Susan pointed out, elections are choices between two people, not between one person and some other fictitious person you might like. So what that means is, for the average voter, they still, well, the average elector, at least, they may still prefer Donald Trump, even if he is not literally fulfilling his promises, to what the opposition was.
But if you're running for dog catcher, I suppose it's okay, mm-hmm, not to be taken literally or seriously,
sure,
or whatever the difference is. I'll have to look it up when we get off the air. but this is the president of the United States. Don't,
sure,
we have to believe what he says? Don't we have to? If he says, I'm going to do these things,
right,
do we allow him to back away and say, well, it doesn't matter? Was he being overly ambitious, and is that a sign of inexperience, not being a politician?
I think it depends what is success, right? If success is reelection, or is success policymaking? And I think it depends which lens you're looking at. If we're talking about the average Trump voter, no, I don't think it frankly matters very much. If you're talking about, does he get important policy that he promised through Congress? No, of course he wasn't going to get term limits through Congress for members of Congress, right? I mean, it's a silly proposition. It'd be like me saying to Susan and Scott, I want to take away tenure for professors. Do you guys support it? Of course not.
Well, and Mitch McConnell said it isn't going to happen. That's not going to be on the agenda about term limits. And
it takes a constitutional amendment.
That's right.
So that's
Mitch McConnell says, we're not going there. But I think we also have to look at that, seriously and literally. There aren't things that he has done well. He's had people for the first time. Maybe not the first time, but question the psychological fitness of someone in the White House. He's had someone, we've talked about his ethics and the ethics of those around him. We've talked about his rhetoric. The presidency, and we all know this, is supposed to have the bully pulpit, and it's the bully tweets. He has not had, I believe, and both Chris and Scott have pointed out, he has not had the ability to persuade. And I think the people that the
why is that?
I think some of it is the fact that he is bullying. I think he is bringing people to the forefront and saying, I'm going to do this. I'm going to win. I am going to give you these things.
But how much of the inability to persuade comes from the fact that you can't necessarily trust what he says because he changes position so often?
Well, I think it's been, I mean, you have to add in there, it's almost schizophrenic. I think if you look at some of the things that he said and what he's done, he's overpromised, there's overreach. And at one time, FDR said that the presidency is a place of moral leadership. We seem to have just not even held him to that standard.
Getting back to immigration enforcement, the courts have blocked his first two executive orders because he did try to do what he said he would do with immigration. And then Congress balked on repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act, something else he said he would do and tried to do. In fact, it looked for a while like he'd be able to do it and may do it by the end of this week, we're told. Would an experienced politician have anticipated these problems, or would any new president whose party controls two branches of government come in with the confidence to make those pledges?
Well, I don't think they would have made a pledge that would have required something as massive as the overhaul of the health care bill. Because, you know, Trump asked, hey, who knew how complex it was? And the answer is everybody who worked on it over the entire Obama administration, Republicans
and the
and
other
Democrats
answer
alike.
Would be anybody who was not a billionaire. Would well,
perhaps. But, you know, he did come in on day one, signed an executive order, but the executive order said, we're going to try and get rid of Obamacare. So, and then he pushed this bill through that, he hadn't fully read. He didn't understand because he was asked a few times about the implications. That's one of the things where somebody who was a politician would have been meeting with and negotiating with the leaders in Congress long before he took office, would have surrounded himself in the transition with some policy experts instead of ideologues who also had been external.
Well, some of these day one promises, like trade relations with changing trade relations with China, new rules on lobbyists, halting efforts to combat global warming, lifting curbs on guns, some of which he's tried to do, some of which he hasn't tried to do. The New York Times said that most of these pledges would involve simply issuing presidential directives, executive orders, or memoranda that would not need legislative approval.
Well, he has done quite a few of those things, including scaling back the EPA. His budget's going to do a whole bunch of those things about enforcement for what the EPA and other entities used to do regarding climate change.
Yeah.
He has scaled back enforcement that will allow coal companies and other fossil fuel organizations to drill more. He's proposed opening up more federal lands. He has signed an executive order.
So he is getting things done.
He is, but it's not the things liberals want him to get done.
Of course not.
So, for example, one of the last acts of Barack Obama was to protect is it Bear's Ear? Was that the National Monument?
I think so.
So the creation of National Monument, Obama and others have used that to protect lands. He just signed an executive order to review all those and with perhaps the plan of taking away the environmental protection of those national monuments and federal lands. So he is actually meeting some of these campaign promises, certainly not on day one, but he is signing executive orders and memoranda to direct his bureaucratic entities to stop enforcing the things they
don't
want.
So in 5 seconds, bottom line, the things that a president can get done without cooperation from Congress, he's doing?
He's getting some of it done.
So his letter grade should go up. We have to take a break. We're coming back with more in a moment.
Really.
And Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Queen's Cup Steeplechase, hosting the 22nd annual Steeplechase races this Saturday, minutes from I-485 Beltway. Experience the thrill of the chase. Tailgating packages and tickets available at queenscup.org. And Clayworks, a Charlotte home for ceramic arts and artists, offering registration now for spring adult classes and children's summer camps. Details at learnclay.com. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis wraps up a Middle East tour with a visit to Afghanistan for an update on America's longest war. The top American there says several thousand additional U.S. soldiers are needed, and the visit comes days after a Taliban attack on a military base killed more than 100 Afghans. So, on point today, coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock. Tom Ashbrook and his guest will talk about how long and how deeply the U.S. should stay involved in that conflict. That's coming up.
April 29th marks the 100th day of Donald J. Trump's administration. It has been a period of nonstop news, excitement, confusion, and protest. Every day this week, NPR takes stock of a president who promised to upend the Washington establishment. Listen for special coverage and analysis of the first 100 days and the road ahead, all this week.
News matters. Stay connected at 90.7 WFAE, at WFAE.org, and with our mobile app.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the first 100 days of the Donald Trump presidency with Dr. Chris Cooper, head of the Department of Political Science and Public Affairs at Western Carolina University, Dr. Scott Huffman, professor of political science and director of the Winthrop Poll at Winthrop University, and Dr. Susan Roberts, professor of political science at Davidson College. By the end of this week, President Trump is on track to have signed 32 executive orders in his first 100 days, more than any president in 50 years. Is he using those orders differently than previous presidents? I'm not sure which one of you to ask that question of.
Well, I think he's using them in some respects to fulfill some of those pledges, and he's looking at those in terms of promises. But one thing, I mean, he has accomplished some of those things by executive order. He said, I want to be unpredictable. He has succeeded at that. He has succeeded as using the media as a foil. People love that. And I think he has had some successes in terms of the executive orders as far as they can go. And I think people, you know, especially with access to abortion, this ping-pongs back and forth with a Democratic president and a Republican president. And these are things that have had some impact. The president has regulations. There, you know, he said, I'm going to scale them back. He said, one for two. I'll pass one and I'll eliminate two. And so
Has that happened?
Well, I don't know if it's happened literally seriously, but I think he wanted
it seriously.
In February,
he signed one about regulatory reform that said that they should all review what can be taken away. So that was the idea of that. But, you know, some of the other – yes, how other presidents have done. You know, every other president in the past – well, since Reagan, I guess, when they came in, for example, one thing they did was all the Republicans signed an executive order saying we would not give federal aid money to any entity overseas that promotes abortions. And then every Democrat comes in and replaces that, and it's taken away, and it's replaced. And so in a way, he has used some executive orders in a way that other presidents have. In another way, he's done exactly what Susan has said and tried to use it as a way to claim he's fulfilling campaign pledges. And then yet in others, he's doing ways that pushes this agenda that he preached on of, you know, scaling back regulations and of opening the lands up on energy. And, you know, of course, some of that, though, goes against the market. Yeah. But that's
so
another
question. He said he would order a hiring freeze on all federal employees to reduce the federal workforce through attrition. Has that happened?
Well, he also, as you pointed out, signed an executive order on immigration that says let's hire 15,000 more ICE agents.
Yeah. So. And one thing just to point out very quickly is Newt Gingrich's contract with America only promised that they would vote on these issues, not that they would pass them. And I think that's a difference between those two contracts to, make America great again, promised and promised passage and promised action and not just action about voting. His members came back and they had a recess. They're walking back a little bit from Trump.
So the Washington Post reports that he has failed to act on about 60% of what he promised would happen in the first 100 days and has broken five of those promises, such as his pledge to label China as a currency manipulator. But the president has declared that he has accomplished more in his first 90 days than any previous president, and that's where Sean Spicer's laundry list of accomplishment comes in. We played that at the beginning of the program. Let's hear it again.
So far, we've passed 24 laws. We've signed 24 executive orders. We've achieved the first Supreme Court confirmation in 100 days since 1881. We've instituted tough immigration policies that have driven illegal border crossings to a 17-year low. We've removed more job-killing regulation through legislation than any president in U.S. history.
So at a rally in Kenosha, Wisconsin last week, President Trump told the crowd, no administration has accomplished more in the first 90 days. Is any of this true?
Well, I think he also said in the history of the presidency.
Yeah,
I mean, not just, you know, he said the history of the presidency. And I think that that is no. I think, and many people, all of us would agree that Supreme Court appointment Gorsuch was McConnell's doing. And that will have long-term impact. And if he wants to count that appointment as and confirmation as a success, he can do that, even though McConnell shepherded it
through. That's where I was going next, because he touts that as one of his as one of his accomplishments. So did Sean Spicer, Neil Gorsuch being on the Supreme Court. And he claims to be the first president to appoint someone to the court in the first 90 days since 1881, which seems to me to be serendipitous, particularly given that the Republicans in Congress refused to even grant a hearing to President Obama's nominee, Merrick Garland. Is that therefore an accomplishment, Chris Cooper? I mean, or is that just splitting hairs here? I mean, the thing has been open for over a year, the seat.
Right. I mean, is that an accomplishment? Sure. I mean, he ended up with somebody in the Supreme Court. On the other hand, I think my 3-year-old son, president, probably could have done the same thing with the Republicans in charge of both houses of Congress, right? This is not a major accomplishment. I think it's one that will have long-term consequences for the United States, but this was not a difficult thing. So at the outset, you said, has he been successful? Has he been the most successful in the first 100 days? Of course not. I don't think anybody would argue that he has. I think smart people can disagree about the consequences of that, about whether it will matter electorally, about whether that is what is driving his approval rating down. But there is really no metric that I'm aware of that would say that Donald Trump has been the most successful president in the first 100 days.
So let me stay with you for a second and talk about something else. In Trump's contract with the American voter, he promised in the first 100 days to renegotiate NAFTA or withdraw from the deal. He said he would announce his withdrawal from the Trans-Pacific Partnership. He said he would instruct the Secretary of the Treasury to label China as a currency manipulator. Is this a case of one out of three ain't bad?
It could be, right? I mean, again, it depends on the lens we're looking at this through. If we're trying to, if the conversation is about has Donald Trump fulfilled his campaign promises, I think the answer is no. I think if we're trying to say is Donald Trump the most successful president in American history, absolutely not. Again, does that matter to his supporters? Does that matter to his party? And are we holding a president whose real goal is to make government not work very well, right? He wants government out of people's lives for the most part. And what his presidency has done so far is to render government fairly impotent.
He did take us out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, but he's not moved on NAFTA, and he did not label China as a currency manipulator because after the meeting with the Chinese leader, he changed his mind on that. Is that simply a matter of learning on the job and finding out how complex things are and how that NAFTA actually does help a certain segment of the population, like farmers in America? Or is this just something that he didn't understand and is not going to be allowed to do?
I don't think he truly understood how complex these things were, but now NATO is not obsolete. Some people that thought or are thinking that President Obama has been successful are those foreign leaders who are breathing a sigh of relief that he is not the populist that he seemed to promise. And I think they're – or the isolationist. I think they're happy with some of that, happier, or at least not so afraid.
Well, you did – you pointed out he pulled out of the TPP, which he had promised to do, and he did. He did not pull out of NAFTA immediately, but he just levied a 20% a tariff essentially on soft wood imports from Canada, which is actually going to drive up house prices in the U.S. And it could be the beginning of a trade war with Canada, and that's going to have huge impact on NAFTA. So he is making moves on that. Maybe he's going to go at things a little more with a scalpel rather than a MOAB. And on China, though, a lot of folks are glad he didn't follow through with that. He was in the wrong in describing the relationship of what China was doing even with their own currency. And so that would be an example, as Susan pointed out, of learning on the job, the same with learning that NATO's not obsolete.
Mm-hmm. Is that a good if housing prices might rise because of the tariff on softwood products from Canada, that means consumers may be hurt. But is there a business segment that will be helped by this, that needed help in the first place?
Well, domestic timber.
Will they Will they be helped substantially by this in some way?
Yeah. You know, interestingly, they Canada buys a lot of hardwood from us. We actually exchange timber. Yes. It's one of our biggest industries. So they have a direct way to retaliate. So the question is, Duel, if they retaliate, would the timber industry in America be helped? No. If they don't retaliate or go somewhere else, they might. This is probably the beginning of a dance about the trade for NAFTA. You know, if you look at NAFTA in the large scale, we in the Carolinas were brutally hit because of the textile industries. But as a nation, economists who aren't from, didn't have relatives in the textile industry like I did, but economists would say, you know, overall the country has benefited, and they would encourage Trump not to decimate NAFTA.
Even though the president says the first 100-day mark is ridiculous, he's scrambling this week to pass another iteration of health care. And tomorrow, he is supposed to release a tax package that will include reductions, quote, bigger, I believe, than any tax cut ever. Is that more hyperbole or do we know?
Massive. And I think one of the headlines, what his staff did not know,
yes,
that he was going to announce something like this.
And that surprised congressional leaders. It was a surprise to his own staff. And if he unveils this tax plan tomorrow, it can't be passed by his 100th day on Saturday, can it?
But he can say he announced and pushed it through. And the other thing is he did stave off a government shutdown by saying, you know, that wall that Mexico is going to pay for. Okay, we'll talk about them paying for it in the fall. He staved off a government shutdown. The tax cut, though, is a much bigger deal than people realize, because depending on whether or not the alternative minimum tax for corporations is included or not, it's going to drive up deficits somewhere between $240 million a year to $4 billion. The rhetoric of his own party about, we need to keep the debt ceiling on. That's just, they're going to have to blow the debt ceiling off to do this. So there's a lot more coming. He just wanted to make the announcement before this artificial deadline that totally doesn't matter.
And even President Trump, Dr. Cooper, has said that he wanted to get health care done first because you can't do tax reform without health care. But he's trying to push both of these through in the same week. What happens if Republicans who are hungry for tax reform tackle tax reform and his suggestions there, but not the health care plan?
Yeah. Look, I mean, I think it's a bit of a mess, right? And he has definitely changed his opinion on this. And I think we've talked a little bit about some of the failures of Trump and sort of failures of him understanding how government works. I would argue that the biggest one of these failures is the inability to understand the importance of information, right? So Mark Meadows, again, the head of Freedom Caucus, has publicly said he found out about the health care plan by reading it on Politico. That is not a good way to get your party on your side, right? So the fact that we are speculating about a plan that may be released tomorrow that somebody wants to be passed this week is not the way government works and not the way government should work, right? People talk about money as being the grease of politics. Information is the true grease of politics.
Right.
He's trying to hold on to it.
But Trump fully understands that that may be how the insiders do it, but his supporters are going to look at him as saying, hey, he did it. He proposed this because they don't listen to this show. They only listen, you know, get a 3 minutes coverage at most on the little news channel, whatever it is that they watch. And so they are only going to take away he did something and not understand that not a true legitimate information.
So as long as he throws stuff on the wall, whether it sticks or not doesn't matter. It's the effort that he put into throwing it up there. Is that what you're saying?
For a lot of voters who do not understand how the American government works, yeah.
Well, and he also wants to portray not just liberals, but inside the Beltway as elitist. He gets his news from cable. He looks at Fox. Any poll that he sees is fake news. And I think he's sending a cue to the American people that it's okay. He said during the campaign, I like the undereducated.
Yeah. On Saturday, it will be his 100th day in office, and that's the day that the government will run out of money unless Congress passes legislation funding key aspects of the government. And one of the main points of contention here in this battle is funding for Donald Trump's proposed wall along the southern border of the U.S. The Trump administration wants Democrats to agree to include initial funding for that border wall in the new budget. The Democrats have vowed not to do so. Does either party want to be blamed for a shutdown of the government?
he's already backed off. Trump's already backed off and said it. He's and we know that because of the number one source on the inside of what's happening in Trump Twitter. Trump has said that, you know, it's he would be willing to talk about this in the fall. So I think his main goal was to avoid a shutdown, especially within his first 100
Chuck
days.
Schumer said, the other, I think last night he said, show me the details on how we pay for this and how we get Mexico to pay for this. I'm listening. Where
Schumer
are the details?
Also tweeted, you know, I think it was a great idea to take the wall off the table, which is just getting too much furniture-related things. But I think that the whole goal of that was to avoid a shutdown and so that Trump could say, hey, we had a significant piece of legislation, but in fact it's just passing a continuing resolution, not much different.
So Dr. Cooper, Trump has brought this chaotic style to the White House and to governing. And is that because, do you think, of the learning curve, or is it his style to throw people off balance, to not know what's coming next, to use it as a negotiating ploy? It's pretty smart.
Yeah.
If it's deliberate.
Yeah, I think these are not mutually exclusive propositions, right? It is possible that this is a strategy that he has used and has worked, and it is possible that it is also part of a learning curve, right? I think both of these things could be at play at the same time. And I think this whole conversation for the last hour keeps bringing me back to when we talk about effects, are we talking about effects on the American public, effects on the government, or effects on the next election, who's going to vote for Donald Trump? And I think those are all three very different answers.
Okay. Now, things do seem to have calmed down a bit. He seems to be tweeting less. Is that my imagination?
I try to look at what time the tweet comes out. If it's 11 o'clock, and that was the time of the tweet about Mexico, in due time, we will do this. And I think it was much more measured. I think he is tweeting less, but some of the tweets are still ones that are fairly dramatic. And the blame game. He's had tweets that aren't just about the presidency. They're about his daughter's fashion line.
So your three professors, give them a grade. Dr. Cooper, first 100-day grade.
D.
D.
Yeah, let's make it unanimous.
Okay. Dr. Susan Roberts, professor of political science at Davidson College. I would have thought you'd be harder because Davidson's hard. Dr. Scott Huffman at Winthrop University and Dr. Chris Cooper from Western Carolina University. Not that you're not all hard, mind you.
That was just me that's hard.
That's right.
Nice try.
Thank you all for the hour.